I in the world. I'm John Batchelor. To Berlin, Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, watching two wars with a third threatened in East Asia, at the same time admiring some of the solutions that have been brought forward in transnational organizations, but not all of them. There's a mixed story at the UN. There's a mixed story at all of the NGOs now in crisis because of Ukraine war, a year and a half later, and Gaza war, several weeks later. At the same time, the European Union is a major transnational organization that has a great deal at stake in Ukraine war and Gaza war. But, Judy, a very good evening to you. Your most recent essay divides the challenge to the European Union in three parts: self-defense, Ukraine, migration, that has to do with the Mediterranean basin, but really a shared burden in all of the EU of the people who are fleeing or evacuating or moving from North Africa and the Middle East for refuge or sanctuary or economic opportunity to the global north, that would be the European Union. And three, the Gaza war and the repeated calls for ceasefire, the repeated remarks about Hamas as a political organization, all very careful language in many tongues in the European Union. I begin with Ukraine. You remark that the European Union is not now looking at self-defense in the event that the United States is no longer the leader in NATO. And you do remark quite correctly, with less than a year till the American election, who is in the White House in 25 does not determine EU policy for now. How is it that the European Union, especially Ursula von der Leyen, present the case for the European Union's self-defense with or without the U.S.? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on your great show. She doesn't actually raise these issues, Ursula von der Leyen, what's going to happen to European security and defence if there's a big change in the administration in the White House. But there's no point in navel-gazing. The European Union went through this during the Trump administration, and the European Union and the European governments did very little to prepare for, not even the day after, but just to prepare if they could intellectually, politically, military take care of their security. It's not against NATO, it's not against the United States, but actually be more independent on how they deal with the security, because it's very vulnerable at the moment. And there's too much talk now about it and very little action about what to do with the European Union security, which actually is not in very good shape.
Mr. Putin has made the decision to continue to be the president of Russia. I understand that's within these last hours, but it appears that he will continue his sovereignty for some time to come. Telling the European Union that this problem is not going to be solved by a change of leadership in Moscow. We have headlines from Ukraine that are alarming in all instances. The bombardment of Ukraine continues, the poverty of the Ukrainian people, and doubts in the Ukrainian government, doubts about whether they can sustain themselves without adequate supply from the United States, from NATO. The puzzle here for me, Judy, reading your remarks about the EU, is there possibly in the EU an opinion that Ukraine will solve this by collapsing and we won't have to worry about building up our defense industry? We won't have to worry about Putin in the future. Ukraine will collapse and we can go back to making money. Is that voiced anywhere?
No. No, definitely not. The idea of a Ukraine that is collapsing is an idea that would send shudders across the European Union. A shattered, collapsed Ukraine would fall into the hands of President Putin. A collapsed Ukraine would make Eastern Europe, Moldova, Belarus, Georgia unstable. And this kind of instability would actually be very, very dangerous for the European Union. The idea of a collapsed Ukraine is simply not out there in the thinking sphere. What is out there is how much more military assistance does Ukraine need? Are the European member states willing to supply this. And for the moment, President Joe Biden is committed to this. But this is going to be this is a war of attrition, and somehow it's not making the headlines anymore in the European media. But this is our neighbor, and our neighbor threatens or enhances our security and stability.
You mentioned Slovakia and Hungary as dissenting members of the EU, which has hobbled my measure. The EU is hobbled by the insistence upon unanimity. Is there a discipline mechanism in the EU to sit down with Hungary and Slovakia and say, you come along with us or you're going to, and then what would happen? Is there anything like that for a conversation?
Well, it's very crude blackmail, actually. Hungary under Prime Minister Viktor Orban always says, we don't believe in military supplying Ukraine and we want negotiations with Russia and so on. But and he's holding up for the moment another financing package for Ukraine. And so is Slovakia. The recently elected Robert Fico is doing very much the same as Orban. But this is just sheer blackmail. Orban wants the post-COVID recovery money, which is a huge amount. And he's linking this to whether or not he would give the support for another EU financing package for Ukraine. It's just very cheap. It's very instrumental. It's very exploitative of the situation. Of course, there is a solution around this, that the EU provides the money bilaterally, maybe puts it into a pool organized by the EU Commission. But nobody's thought about this at the moment. But this may be the way out.
Alternative for Deutschland. You've introduced me to its success in two state elections, Hesse and Bavaria, I believe. And there are articles in the London media. I'm always very careful to emphasize that because London is not without a filter. But in any event, London media is saying Alternative for Deutschland is a rising nationalist party that is turns its back on Ukraine, turns its back on NATO, turns its back on the EU, turns its back on the United States. And there are state elections, you've taught me, next year that are very significant. Is Alternative for Deutschland a warning that Germany is losing ability to sustain support for Ukraine because of coalition politics? Is the clock running?
This is a very different setup. I thought you were going to ask me a different question about whether or not all the AfD, the Alternative for Germany, Alternative for Deutschland, can influence the status quo. It has already influenced the status quo because the status quo is so weak. And his communication politics, especially under the Social Democrat Chancellor Olaf Scholz, are so weak. They're not consequent. They don't have conviction. And so what we see now in opinion polls with the AfD having 22% of the vote if elections were held tomorrow, that's second after the opposition Christian Democratic Union, which used to be, as you know, led by former Chancellor Angela Merkel. And the SPD, the Social Democrats, are trailing, the Greens are trailing, and the Free Democrats, another coalition partner, they wouldn't even jump to 5% to get into Parliament. It's all in flux at the moment. But the interesting thing is that the AfD is making big roads into the West German states. It used to be just the Eastern German states, particularly Saxony and Thuringia. Now they're in Hesse and Bavaria. As you mentioned, in fact, they're in the majority of the German states, and they're just campaigning on anti-migration, anti-climate, anti-euro, and of course they won't leave the EU because they know this would be electorally very weak, and they're going to stand for the European Parliament. So they choose their fights; they want their cake and eat it.
You mentioned immigration. That is another security threat to Europe. You identify in your essay as Strategic Europe. The threat, as I understand, is being dealt with by bribery, money being paid to Tunisia, which is a source of migrants, smuggling right into Italy, bribery to other states in North Africa and the Middle East for some time. Not only is it not working, but also it isolates Europe as something, as someone who can be targeted by unstable and tyrannical governments in the Mediterranean basin. Is that understood in the EU, or do they skip that fact that they're giving money to the brutes?
They know exactly what they're doing. This is a real politic of the most negative sense that the European Union, and whether it's Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission, or the member states, keep the migrants out, get to the source of it, give Libya, give Egypt. Give Egypt money, give Tunisia money and other countries money to keep the refugees and migrants there, which is a shocking solution because actually Egypt is so stretched in dealing with refugees. One of the reasons why actually it won't open up its own country to taking in the Palestinian refugees from Gaza, they're simply overwhelmed. And so at the moment, the EU solution is let's outsource our security problems to Turkey. Let's outsource it to other third countries. And now the European Union is trying to have a coherent asylum refugee policy, but there isn't a, Hungary is against this, Poland against this, other countries are against this. Exporting our problems actually exports a kind of insecurity. But this is a very short-sighted view of how to deal with the long-term huge strategic implications of migration, of climate change, and of economic corruption and lack of perspective for these countries.
The four powers that I pay attention to, London, Paris, Rome, and Berlin, each of them have their own challenges for migration. Is the conversation in those four capitals that the migrants are a source of instability? Is that how they're understood? This is undermining our democracy.
I think the migration issue has to be divided in two ways. One is the continuing increased flows of migration and how to address the original problems of this. But the second one is the migrants over the decades who have settled in Europe and the kind of perception they now have, especially when it comes to anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is absolutely on the rise in Great Britain, in Austria, in Germany. The Star of David is daubed on houses in the Jewish areas in France. What is Europe coming to after the Holocaust, that the anti-Semitism and the hate speech is so dreadful? And here in Berlin, where I sit, restaurants, and somehow pro-Palestinian groups think these restaurants are owned by Jewish owners, and then they go and try to intimidate or attack these restaurants. It's a bit like 1933. It's terribly frightening. And I know from my Jewish friends that they cannot send their kids to the kindergarten or to schools on the special school buses. We mustn't underestimate actually what is happening across Europe and particularly in Germany now, caused by the war between Israel and Hamas.
Let us turn to the third challenge for the European Union right now, not in the future, not depending upon who wins in November 24 for the White House. Right now, the third is the Gaza war with Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. This is the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Your subscription is easy. Just put your email in and you'll hear all the voices of the very important European Union. If the United States has an ally, it's the EU and its NATO subset. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.